Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, a Citywire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision-making. If you're a fund selector, independent financial advisor, or institutional capitalist looking for insights, analysis, and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Rowan Uister. When a parent dies, financial provisions for children can become tangled in legal red tape, poorly understood benefits, and unintended consequences. And what if the child passes away before reaching adulthood? So in this episode, we unpack the custodians of children's inheritance and the cracks that families can fall through. For financial advisors, this conversation is especially critical. They are often the first and sometimes the only person clients can turn to when navigating death benefits, trust structures, or winding up estates. Understanding the implications of approved and unapproved benefits, nomination forms, beneficiary funds, and the pitfalls of the Guardians Fund is key to providing lasting, responsible advice. To help us explore this sensitive and complex topic, I'm joined by David Herford, Chief Executive of Fairheads Benefit Services, a leading independent provider of beneficiary funds and umbrella trusts for retirement funds in South Africa. Welcome to the studio, David.
Gee, thanks for having me, Ron. It's a really important topic, so I'm glad we've got a chance to talk about it today.
Let's start with the basics. Many South Africans assume that their will determines who gets what, but that's not necessarily true when it comes to retirement fund benefits, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. I think it's a misconception that people have that the money that's sitting in their retirement fund will just be dealt with in terms of their will, but actually it's excluded from their estate. So they really need to understand the impact that might have on their dependents. Ultimately, the retirement benefits that you have are the decision about who receives those benefits lies with the trustees of the retirement fund. They're empowered through Section 37C of the Pension Funds Act to make determination about who's going to get that money. And they will look at all sorts of things to do with your life, look at who your dependents are, those sorts of things. So it's a really important point to understand that that's not going to be dealt with in terms of your will.
So when trustees do decide in favor of a minor child, what are their payout options?
So I think the trustee's duty is a pretty onerous one under that Section 37C. And what they need to look at, amongst other things, is where that money should be placed if it in fact needs to be paid on behalf of a child, a minor dependent under age 18 in South Africa. So one of the options, or a couple of options they've got, they can either pay that amount to the child's guardian, and the guardian usually refers to the surviving spouse or a legal guardian that's been appointed. So they can also make that payment to a caregiver, a lump sum payment to a caregiver on behalf of that child. That's often not something that trustees want to do, because a caregiver and a guardian have very different rights and responsibilities in terms of the child. And then they've also got the option of paying it to a beneficiary fund or into a trust. That final option also can come with a whole range of complexities, though. So I think the key bits there is they can pay it out as a lump sum, they can pay it out into a beneficiary fund to be looked after on behalf of that child. They can also pay it out as a pension, an ongoing pension to that child, but then they must make the lump sum payment to the child when they turn 18. So those are some of the options that they've got at that point of decision making.
But quickly, what's the main advantage of a beneficiary fund?
Yeah, so I think the beneficiary fund is probably one of the best kept secrets in South Africa. I think, and it's also a uniquely South African vehicle. So a beneficiary fund is a pension fund organization that is regulated under the Pension Funds Act. So it's regulated under exactly the same set of legislation that a normal retirement fund would be. And what they've been designed for is to hold money on behalf of minor dependents of deceased retirement fund members. And if you think about it, it's essentially You know, if you think about like the old family trust notion, that's how it's established. That's really the structure of it. The money is held on behalf of that child, and then the trustees of that beneficiary fund, who are a professionally appointed board of trustees, will make decisions about how that money is used. And typically it's used to further the child's education or for their daily well-being needs, but for the general advancement of that child. It can't be used for anything else. And so I think that that's it's a really great product where you don't have to look after that money yourself. It can be properly invested and properly used, and make sure that it gets used for the benefit of that child.
David, one of the more emotionally complex and less talked about scenarios is when the child beneficiary passes away before reaching 18. What happens then, and who manages that estate?
So, yeah, no, look, that's exactly right. And in fact, we do have a large number of those that unfortunately do pass away before they turn 18. Any money that's left in the beneficiary fund that is due to that individual will simply be paid to their estate. And when I say simply paid to their estate, it's not that simple at all, because anybody who's used or has been through with a winding up of an estate, particularly an interstate estate, understands how complicated and how difficult it can be, particularly dealing with the Master of the High Court and pulling together all the information that you need to make representations to the Master.
So even if there is money available, bureaucracy can prevent it from helping when it's needed most.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think the difficulties that we've had in particular with the Master's Office and the delays that are caused there are difficult enough for people that are well-versed in financial circumstances or financial matters. I mean, you can imagine somebody who isn't financially all that sophisticated having to try and sort of work their way through the administrative complexities that the Master's Office requires when dealing with these sorts of things. I mentioned that in the large majority of these cases, the child would have died interstate. That means they haven't got a will. And so in South Africa, you can have a will. Once you turn 16, you're allowed to put a will together for yourself. But the vast majority of people in the beneficiary fund would obviously not have a will. And so they die interstate, which means that it's a much more complicated affair in terms of dividing up that estate amongst the heirs.
Well, let's move on to non-retirement fund benefits like employer-owned group life insurance or personal savings. These do form part of the estate right. And how can parents ensure that their children are protected?
Yeah, so if I could just add, so beneficiary funds were designed to receive employment-related death benefits stemming from the retirement fund of a member. And so what that means is that if you have a fund-owned policy or what we would typically know as a group life policy, you can place those into a beneficiary fund as well. And so, you know, that becomes quite a nice way to house those benefits on behalf of any minor children. And that can simply be done as a nomination form to be paid into a beneficiary fund. Where it's a retail insurance policy, a life insurance policy, and you want to nominate a minor dependent on that policy, you often run into the difficulties as to who's going to receive that money, because you can't settle that money they can't pay the claim to the minor nominee. And so typically we'll have a discussion about, well, who receives that money on behalf of the child. And it can get quite difficult. One of the things that we've established over the last few years is what the notion of an umbrella trust. Now, an umbrella trust really is, for all intents and purposes, exactly the same as a beneficiary fund in terms of how it works, how it operates, the way we run the fund, but the trust rather. But the only real difference there, I suppose, is that the regulatory environment is slightly different, where it's dealt with under the Trust and Property Control Act versus the Pension Fund Act for beneficiary funds. But for all intents and purposes, as I say, we run them in exactly the same way. And so benefits can be received into the trust, held on behalf of a child, used for their benefit during their formative years. And then when they turn 18, they can receive the balance of the money that's left. And it doesn't actually have to just be at 18 in the umbrella trust environment either. It can be any age nominated by the person that settles that claim.
David, what about parents who leave money directly to a guardian? You kind of alluded to that earlier. And I also want to talk to you about the Guardians Fund. Maybe you can also answer that in totality.
Yeah, so I think it's fraught with difficulties, this one. I think it's slightly easier when there is a legal guardianship in place. One of the spouse passes away and leaves money to the surviving spouse, and there's a general expectation. In fact, there's an obligation. There are some rights involved here around the care of children, and so leaving the benefit to a surviving spouse is somewhat less complex. Although, what I would add is that benefit, unless it's properly ring fenced, does then form part of the estate of that surviving spouse. And so there could be tax complications with that. There could be creditor complications with that. So in the case of a creditors, that money could be used to settle creditors. And so that becomes quite difficult. And you need to be a little bit cautious about that. Where there are no surviving spouses or no legal guardians, we have a unique situation in South Africa where there's a large number of single parent households. And if that parent was to pass away, there is no legal guardian remaining. And so the process to go and appoint a legal guardian or a curator through the courts can be quite complicated and can be quite expensive at the same time. And so what we find in practice is that a lot of people don't go down that route. And so what ends up happening is the caregiver, it's a term defined in the Children's Act, the term caregiver comes into play. And a caregiver is the person that's actually or factually looking after the child. Typically, it's a grandmother or it's an aunt or it's a that sort of thing. And I think really anybody should show extra caution when paying benefits to a caregiver on behalf of their child. I think that could come with a whole range of complications and really should be very, very cautious before doing that. Remembering that a caregiver does not have the same rights and responsibilities as a legal guardian does towards their child. Insofar as the Guardians Fund is a state-run fund which essentially looks after money which is payable to minors, amongst other things, which is payable to minors until they turn they reach the age of majority, at which point they child can claim the money from the Guardians Fund. I think the difficulty with the Guardians Fund is its lack of transparency and some of the issues that have been prevalent over the last little while with the Guardians Fund, but particularly in relation to some maladministration, some fraud that's been fairly widespread. I think those are cautionary signs that the Guardians Fund, in my view, should be avoided as far as possible. It's difficult to claim, and I think it has a noble purpose, but I think in practice, it's not somewhere where I would like my child's money to be. I would much rather make arrangements for it to be either placed into a trust, either a single trust or an umbrella type trust, or if possible, a beneficiary fund.
David, let's talk about the importance of the executor. Let's just explain first who he is who he or she is and what they are supposed to do. But how important is it for the people in the estate planning process to direct an executor in a certain direction?
So that's a great question. I think an executor, people sometimes sort of nominate somebody that they know and trust as their executor, and that person accepts the role in the will. And sometimes don't think they realize what they've just accepted, because the role of an executor is an extremely onerous one. They're essentially stepping into the shoes of the deceased person to wind up their estate, and they have a responsibility as well as a whole range of reporting requirements to to properly wind up that estate and make sure all the debts are settled, make sure that each of the benefits that were supposed to go to each of the individuals is received. And so it is a very onerous process. And you really do need to not only have somebody that you trust to do that, to fulfill that role, but also somebody that knows what they're doing and has the time to do it, because it is a administratively complex process. Oftentimes, what people will do in their will is nominate a trust or an estate administration firm, a reputable estate administration firm, together with somebody that they know and trust as joint executors on their estate. And I think that that's a good way to be able to achieve both the best of both worlds. You have somebody that can, that knows what they're doing, knows the ins and outs of dealing with the master's office and dealing with deceased estates, as well as somebody that you can trust to make sure that it gets settled correctly and in terms of your wishes. Remember, your will sets out what your wishes are, and your executor's role is to carry out those wishes.
David, you mentioned earlier what happens if somebody dies without a will. But sometimes people do draw up wills, but they're not considered valid. Maybe you can just explain to our readers what a valid will entails.
Gosh, so a valid will, you're testing my background on valid wills, but a valid will in South Africa, there are a number of requirements which would make a will valid, which speak to that it's in writing, that it's being witnessed correctly, that the witnesses aren't a party to the will, that it's been initialed on all pages, etc. So there's some formalities around a will that need to be adhered to, and so I think that that's very important. Drawing up a will on a napkin and keeping it in your sort of bedside table drawer is probably not the best way to go. And there are loads of ways to affordably set yourself up a will. So you can either speak to somebody who can help you with that. There are a number of online tools these days who will provide those sorts of services to you. So I think it's really important to get the formalities of the will right, and then give really proper consideration to what your wishes are in your will. And so because that's the thing that's going to speak for you when you're no longer around. That's the thing that's going to determine who's going to receive these benefits, what's going to happen to those benefits, it can avoid a whole range of family issues, legal issues. It is a very, very important for everybody to have a will. And I shudder sometimes to think how many people in South Africa don't have a will today.
David, the best protection clearly comes from foresight and, of course, the right legal structures. As a final thought, what would you say to the financial advisors out there to tell their clients where to start, and even if they have started, what to check that everything is in place?
So I think it starts absolutely, as I said, with preparing a will, giving thought to what's going to go into your will. What are the arrangements that you would like to have carried out by your executor, who your executors are, making sure that you understand, what your financial position is and what you're leaving behind. Have it clearly documented so that you can, I know that, people keep a life file. And I think that that's a great idea, because you can contain in that file all the pertinent information that's going to help make it easier for the executor to settle that estate quickly and for that money to flow to your heirs. I think the other consideration that's really important, and I think there's not enough thought given to it, is the immediate aftermath of your death. Is there going to be money available for your family for them to survive? Because winding up an estate is not a short process. It does take time, and oftentimes here the liquidity issues that families face, simply because they didn't make arrangements to have some sort of an injection of liquidity into the estate. Again, there are a number of insurance type arrangements that you can make to cover that immediate short-term need. And I think that those are the types of things that you really do need to think about right at the beginning of this process.
Well, that brings us to the end of this discussion. And with uncertainty still very much up in the air, it's crucial to stay informed, stay agile, and lean on trusted advice to guide your estate planning decisions. Thank you, David, for joining us today. To all our CityWise South African listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uister, and my producer, Alan Walsh, from the CityWise Studios team. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. We're available on all major platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and iono.fm. All our CityWise South Africa podcasts and videos are also available on our webpage, so go register and explore our growing library of multimedia content. And with that, and until next time, goodbye.